Okay, let's go to Isaiah 40. We are approximately on schedule in terms of the 3-year cycle.
It's going to come back.
If a year we're say, if a year we're say 400 days long, we would be on schedule.
Shut up, Rick.
Okay. Stop clock, right.
No, what we've done is we've skipped. You don't realize that. See, because you haven't been paying attention.
Well, but if I had, I would have.
Oh, no. There is no she's up that tunnel.
Anyway, the Isaiah 40, verse 27 through Isaiah 41, verse 20, is the reading for the period of that we read, the Genesis 12, 1 through 13, 18. So remember that Genesis 12 is and 13 are about, they have to do with the call of Abraham and Abraham's heritage. Remember, everything from now on in the Bible is dealing with a line. It's not dealing with the history of the world or the population of the world or this. It's dealing with a singular seed. And that seed finally is manifested in Christ. And that seed of Christ is now manifested in you. And so all of these things that we're about to read are connected with that seed. Amen? Isaiah 40. No, we're going to start there. Read.
We should start in the middle.
Huh?
Yeah, we should, because we've been always starting on the end. We've been starting on the end a lot.
We like to have inane arguments, by the way. Just you haven't noticed.
Verse 27, chapter 40.
Oh, is it spelling bee or something?
Carpe diem, crystal.
No, I had trouble last time for not saying what the first time was. Okay. Already?
Don't stop now.
Please, say on.
Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from the Lord, and my judgment is passed over from my God? How hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary? There is no searching of his understanding. He giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might he increaseth strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint.
No. As we studied in Pentecost, or at Pentecost, the eagle, the face of the eagle is one of the four faces of the walk of the Spirit. It's what happens to you when you recognize that the flesh is gone, that you're abandoned, that you can afford to deny yourself, you can afford to abandon yourself, and you don't pay any attention anymore to reasonable expectations. Just live. Remember, the four faces are the face of the new man, or Christ. Christ in you, the hope of glory. The face of the bullock, or the ox, which represents the burnt offering. Everything's completed. Everything's exactly as it should be. The face of the lion, which represents either total rest or total action. There's no more thinking about doing something. It's either rest or action. And then the face of the eagle. You shall mount up with wings as an eagle. And the thing about an eagle is that it only moves fundamentally by the power of the wind. It just moves its wings. And it's the eagle loves turmoil, because turmoil is what causes the eddies and the air to rise. And the greater the turmoil, the higher the eagle can rise. The other thing about eagles is that wherever eagles are, wherever the scriptures say that wherever the body is, there the eagles are, wherever the eagles are, there the body is, vice versa, is that the serpent cannot exist in the presence of eagles. Now, again, if we see this as a metaphor, if we see this as an internal process that's happening in you, once the eagle is there, And it's, and again, we're just reading about it in light of the first call of Abraham. And yet we're reading about the victory in, represented in the eagle at the same time. So it's in effect, it's the same as Christ saying, look not unto the harvest and say that there are 3 months to the harvest, even though the grain is still in the ground, they can't even see it. But look and see that the fields are white. In other words, you see that it's finished now. Even at the process of the call of Abraham, you see that he is finished. And that your walk is as an eagle. And if you know that, it shall be. There is no... there's no fear of turmoil. Remember we said that the evidence of the presence of Satan in your life or in your world is the presence of peace, apparent peace, and the absence of turmoil. I mean, apparent peace, absence of turmoil, no eagles, a lot of snakes. It even exists that way in the natural, where life is easy, temperate zone is real, mild, lot of moisture, no eagles, thousands and thousands of snakes. Same so in your life. If you've so structured your life and so reduced your parameters to such a degree that you don't have any turmoil, then there's great snake population. There's a snake under every tree, under every rock, I should say. That's why we are a people that believe in the destruction of these little phony barriers that you put on your life so that you can have the appearance of peace. Now, you always think that's what you want. You get in an argument with your wife, and you're convinced you want peace. You get, it's time for your review, and you're convinced you want peace. You want things to be right.
Yeah.
But, again, think of it in terms of work. Where there is the absence of turmoil in the atmosphere and the life and around, there's the presence of snakes. Okay? Okay, how many verses? You didn't read enough verses. You let me interrupt you. You're supposed to read seven verses.
Okay, two more. Keep silent before me, O the islands, and let the people renew their strength. Let them come near, then let them speak. Let us come near together to judgment. Who raised up the righteous man from the east, called him to his foot, gave the nations before him, and made him rule over kings? He gave them as the dust to his sword, and as driven stubble to his bow.
This is for everyone? Okay. He pursued them and passed safely even by the way that he had not gone with his feet. Who had wrought and done it, calling the generations from the beginning.
Who is he talking about?
Christ or Abraham.
Yeah, but he's always talking everything. Remember, everything in the scriptures. Jesus said in John 5, he said, you search the scriptures. Go through and you find it's a manufacturer's handbook. You search the scriptures, for in them you think you find principles of eternal life, or principles of life. And so you go in here and you use it like you would a psychology book, and you, or else you use it like you would a sorcery book. And that's what life has taught you. That's what you do. You go, it says I'm supposed to be this way. Wow, Let's look and see what he said. Go to, unless leave your, keep your marker there, but let's go to John 5. Now, when the New Testament talks about Moses, it's talking about the Torah, what the Jews call the Torah. It's the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, right? Now, the New Testament talks, the New Testament, when if you have, is everybody there, John 5? Okay, well, let's just go there. John 5:39. Search the scriptures. For in them you think you have eternal life, and they are they which testify of me, and you will not come unto me, that you might have life. I receive not honor from men, but I know you, that you have not the love of God in you. I am come in my Father's name, and you receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, him you will receive. Now what does it mean to come in somebody's name?
I go to IBM, I say I'm here for micrographics, blah, 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 we shake hands, and we do a deal on that basis.
By their authority.
Okay.
So that you, in effect, are carrying, you know, one of the things, when Harry first started.
Time for Harry stories.
Hey. Oh, cool. Tell us another Harry story. I'm going to let.
Gosh, Harry's your friend.
Okay. When Harry first started working for the foundation, he'd get all frustrated because he was convinced that nothing would ever get done. He'd go someplace and he'd say he was Harry Getzloff and they didn't pay any attention to him and they treated him badly. He thought, oh crap, this is terrible and I just can't do anything. I used to be able to do stuff. I used to be able to get things done, now I can't do anything. And one day I reminded him that when he used to get things done and he was operating as Harry Getzloff, a marketing director of Coca-Cola. And so when he went to some place and asked him to do something, he handed him a card, he had Coca-Cola behind them. He came in their name. And all of a sudden now, he comes as Harry.
He's a guy.
And my God, he can't do anything. He can't even hardly walk. He can't cut anything without cutting his fingers off. He just, I mean, he's just worthless. Why? Because he's coming in his own name. Do you understand? Most people go through life coming in someone else's name. What?
Nobody cares.
Right, nobody cared. I'm Harry Getzloff. What? So what?
So
get out of here. Get out of here, you fool. Well, I used to be able to do, I could have been a contender.
I could have been somebody.
But that's what it means to come in someone's name. To present yourself in someone's name. Now, it's really a big deal. You almost never present yourself in your own name. The evidence you don't is because if you're going into a new situation, the first thing someone asks you is, what do you do? Now, when someone asks you what you do, they're not asking it because they're interested in what, they don't care about your occupation, they care in whose name you're coming in.
Where do they put you in the soul?
And not only that, how they can benefit from your name.
So while at the gridiron, I started to feel really weird because I was sitting with
the honchos,
Langer and Bill Evans, and I was just like, "Who are you?"
I'm an editorial assistant.
But please hear me. This is really important. Jesus said, I came in my Father's name and you didn't receive me. If another comes in another's name, you will gladly receive him. How often do you gladly receive someone because of whose name they're in? That makes you a respecter of persons. And you do it because you want to figure out how to use them.
Right.
Now, that use is causing people to be utilitarian. It causes people to be tools And so you can only have utilitarian relationships with them rather than expressive. The relationships with Christ were always expressive. He just was, without regard to whether the was any doing anybody any benefit. But not you. Now, salesmen are especially guilty of this.
You haven't been around in Salt Lake
for I haven't.
He's got to catch up.
I got a long. Yeah. I got to catch up for a long time in Burnett.
He's already getting married in Bristol. It's just his turn.
Go for it.
I'm so glad Burnett's here.
Huh?
I'm so glad Burnett's
here. He's like a heat shield. He's
a hairy heat shield. That's right. But can you see? If Ed is going out to do a story, the first thing he says is, "I'm Ed Housewright from the Dallas Morning News." So he's coming in the Dallas Morning News with the weight of that name in this area is important. So doors open, people pay attention, da-da-da-da-da-da. If he went as an independent writer, most of the time they just laugh at him. And then you'd wonder why. Well, I could have used to be somebody.
I used to know Harry.
Yeah. I used to come in Harry's day.
Then
you and Harry get together and be like,
Ed. I can just hear you say, "I'm Ed. I know Harry."
but see how totally evil the world is, because that's the basis of the world system. Especially in New York.
You know, it's funny because he said he went to Highland Park, and people in Highland Park won't acknowledge him at all. I mean, they won't even answer the door.
Yeah.
So it is just different areas.
Yeah. But it's a really important one, because if you're in the name of Christ, you will never say you're in the name of Christ. Do you understand? Anytime you hear of somebody in the name of Christ or speaking of how much they love God, it's a sure sign they expect to be paid for it. If you're in the name of Christ, you're in the nature of, and it will be, I mean, there won't. It's this thing, and people will sense it. It's this thing of meekness. Remember we talked that what the word meek means? It's a timber wolf walking through your living room, and you know that sucker could take your neck off, and he doesn't. That's the fact that he doesn't constitutes meekness.
Well, same thing happened here tonight with her. I mean, she was from Arkansas. You wouldn't have said she's from Arkansas. So this is Kelly from New York. It's important. That's a writer from New York.
Yeah, it's
you just said this is Kelly, but so.
Yeah.
She's from the Arkansas. Or this Kelly from Bottleneck Springs, Arkansas. So.
Kelly from Pleasant Grove.
That
hey.
She's a writer. She's from Kentucky.
The world's full of writers.
You say New York.
It's
true. Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, and the fact is, we do it unconsciously. We do it constantly. And it's ultimate evil. Because it has as its goal manipulation.
Right.
Now, that's, and what's really sick is when someone uses the manipulation from somebody else's name. In other words, you're not even. It's like the evidence in the scriptures is when the guy tried to cast out demons in the name of Paul, who knew Jesus.
Paul, I know.
Jesus, I know, but you sucker, you're mine. Come here. But
what a horrible feeling. What a horrible feeling.
Yeah, you're mine. Linda Blair?
Yeah.
Oh,
God.
Now, the idea that Christ would say this incredible, simple, declarative sentence, "I receive not honor from men." Well, my God, I mean, can you? That's everything. He wasn't, his position, his identity was never dependent on what someone else thought of him. His identity was never dependent on some other's name. The reason to be in the name of the Father is so important is because to be in the name of the Father is silent. To be the name of the Father is hidden. It's mysterious. It's that It's that certainty that never has to be expressed. You come in another's name, they'll receive you. Like God, at the time, if you came, you know, in his time, if you came in Pilate's name or Herod's name or the emperor's name, you had the seal. People paid attention to you constantly. It's the same today. We just have different gods that they put their stamp on. Does everybody, it's real important that you understand this. That's why the evidence, the only way that you know if you're a believer, I mean, really, it doesn't matter what your mouth says. The way the scriptures say that you know that you're a believer is if you no longer need the praise of men. Now, that's why to be a believer is a process. Because you've been taught from childhood to require the praise of men in order to survive. And you've been even taught how to manipulate to get it. Mm-hmm. Some of you didn't have to be taught very much, but like there's some of you that have, you know, you're so transparent that you pay the kids to sing you happy birthday.
Who would be that stupid?
It's rough being a time.
Surely no one here.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Verse 41, I receive not honor from men, but I know you. In other words, I understand, I see through you. I know you, that you have not the love of God in you. Why? The evidence that you don't have the love of God in you is that you need to receive honor from men in order to have identity. I am come in my Father's name, and you receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, you him or you will receive. How can you believe? Hear me, it's a plaintive cry throughout all eternity. How can you believe, or how can you say you believe, which receive honor one of another, and seek not the honor that cometh from God only? The silent honor, the silent certainty, the faith that is expressed as knowing or knowledge of Him. Now, these next two verses have to do with what I just said in Isaiah, which you probably forgot what I said. Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. There is one that accuseth you, even Moses, in whom you trust. For had you believed Moses, you would have believed me, for he wrote of me. Now, in the Greek, of that sentence in the Greek says, he wrote only of me. So that what he said is that all of the law testified or revealed only aspects of this mystery man, this Jesus Christ. But if you believe not his writings, how then should you believe my words? Now, let's go back to Isaiah 41. You understand? Does everybody understand this clearly? I know it seems subtle. It's really not. It's so obvious and plain when you see it.
Well, what I'm hearing you say, I'm seeing, is that there's a system. It's a system that's based on the respect of men. And it's a totally utilitarian system. It's a system by which you categorize people. Everybody is categorized by whether they can or cannot benefit each other. And he wasn't in that system.
Yeah. That's why
he was of no benefit.
Man, that's why it says, like, what we try to do. Invite the homeless here. We don't have any rich people. We don't invite any rich people here. Invite the homeless. Invite people that you can't benefit from. Then you shall have true benefit. Now that's awesome. Because it convicts all of us. Mm-hmm. When you have a party, don't invite someone to the party that can in return invite you. were talking tonight about the homeless, how that in the Talmud and in the Quran, it both says that the person that takes in the homeless benefits more from that act of charity than the one, than the homeless person taken in. But the benefit is primarily in the arena of exposing hypocrisy. We were talking this morning in the Bible study that as far as we can tell, this last few years that we've been alive in, it's the only time in history in which self-seeking is universally rewarded.
And encouraged.
And encouraged. In every other time of history, self-seeking, either by the political system itself or by the religious world of the time, self-seeking was condemned. This is the only time in history when self-seeking has been universally rewarded and encouraged. Now, that's unbelievable. From what we see, from what the Spirit says self-seeking is the only sin. And yet we live in a society in which every aspect of life is self-seeking. Well, how can these words make any sense to anybody? If the predicate for life is, how can it improve me? Then they will have to rewrite this book and put it in modern man's language.
Now they come out with an even more gutless version than the previous Good News for Modern Man book.
I'm just getting, it made me mad. I don't want you to even tell me. I don't want to know.
It's now a color.
Too late.
You get to write in your own name. It will
God.
That's funny.
That's
Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, and Gimme.
That's right. Promises were made to
me.
That just reminds me of like the first Bible that I owned, I think personally, was a Ryrie study Bible. It was like a gift.
Can you say Ryrie?
Ryrie.
Can you say her?
She has an autograph of
Ryrie.
And I would read it.
Oh my God.
I mean, And I've looked through a couple of those versions, and it's like one of a thousand self-help books that I've, you know.
Cotton candy.
Yeah, there's nothing in it that, there's no reason why you would continue reading.
His wife really did wear a hat to church.
She divorced.
All those years I spent memorizing the Bible.
What? What are you talking about?
Dr. Ari's wife always wore a hat.
Why do I want to know that?
What does that mean?
Why is that brought up?
That screwed up version of Corinthians.
Yeah.
Because he was totally domineering it. I know the inside story of it, because they went to my parents' church and she divorced him. Big scam.
Yeah.
And he had to leave the church.
The guy that wrote the Ryrie Study Bible is divorced.
Right on out then. We should see it don't work.
That's a church you belong to the Ryrie.
Not if he had me, but he left him. He scammed him.
I know.
Writes the Bible.
Bring that up.
Gets a divorce.
Remind me.
But again, that's what, I mean, we've talked about this 100 times. When we met, she had been excommunicated by the church. But she defended the church. She defended a system that failed you. That's ludicrous.
Yeah. So now you find out the guy that it was named after got thrown out for the same thing?
Take that book and hurl it.
That's sort of funny.
That is pretty funny.
Anyway, 41:4.
Who's reading?
Me.
You have lost control.
What?
He's taking it back.
44. Who hath wrought and done it, calling the generations from the beginning? I, the Lord, the first, and with the last, I am he. The isle sought and feared, the ends of the earth were afraid, drew near and came. They helped everyone, his neighbor, and everyone said to his brother, be of good courage. So the carpenter encouraged the goldsmith, and he that smootheth with the hammer, him that smote with the anvil, saying, it is ready for the soldering, and he fastened it with nails that it should not be moved. But thou, Israel, art my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend, thou whom I have taken from the ends of the earth, and called thee from the chief men thereof, and said unto thee, thou art my servant, I have chosen thee, and not cast thee away. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. Yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness.
Okay. Now, the whole process here in verse 5, 6, and 7. The eyes saw it and feared. The ends of the earth were afraid, drew near, and came. They helped everyone his neighbor, and everyone said to his brother, be of good courage. So the carpenter encouraged the goldsmith, and he that smootheth with the hammer, him that smote the anvil, saying, it is ready for the soldering. Fasten it with nails that it should not be moved. What he's talking about is this conspiracy to idolatry.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to get it together here.
Okay, what happens is when a society at large suspends critical judgment. It's when you go to a faith healing. And in that, you go to a service where there's the faith healing. If the intent of the service is to go and see a healer, I promise you, you can go to any culture in the world and see the same thing. It doesn't have to be Christian. And you will see a group of people who so completely want to believe that they suspend critical judgment. And in that environment, they enhance each other's idolatry. And if they see in you a wire coming loose, they'll reach over and solder it because they don't want their common idolatry exposed as futile. And so that's what we have. We have total systems. It's society does it in every arena of life. It's conspiracy, alliance, towards common idolatry.
Tomorrow you're going to read in the paper that 250,000 people are visiting the Ayatollah Khomeini's grave, thinking that some healing is going to take place.
Yeah.
I got that on the wire service today, and it just blew my mind. You know, I mean, this is the second year. Now it's become
a thing.
Or that thing. Yeah.
It's a conspiracy. It's the same thing that happens at Lourdes or a bunch of people are going to get healed at Elvis's grave.
Well, that might work.
Huh?
Yeah, let's try.
Because they're coming in the name of Coke.
Yeah. Right. You wonder why you're made fun of and you make statements like that.
What?
The name of Elvis Presley.
I'll come in the name of Elvis Presley.
How about Marvin D. Love?
Yeah, really, he has no name.
Huh?
What is that? The Fourth Square Episcopal Baptist Congregational Synod South of God Bible Church.
It's a rough name.
You come in the name of everybody.
there's this black gal in Fort Worth that's an old friend of mine. She's a gospel singer, and she's up there in my with Mahalia Jackson. And she started a church. In all good intents, because she got so ticked off at all these other churches and so, but she did. It's like this. It's the charismatic Four Square Pentecostal Church of Christ in God. It's got about 12 names on the church. And she invited me over there when they opened the church. So somebody went with me. Hold
on. Does it have an acronym?
You know my favorite name of a church.
Wait a minute. Who went with me?
I'm trying to remember Bloom. Who it was. It was Bloom. And that was when
Bloom.
You told them how lucky they were to be black and persecuted. And
oh, yeah, that's right.
John got real nervous.
John got mad at me. Anyway, I said, wow. And this name, I mean, it's like, it goes on forever. And it's like, it's all over the place. There's this huge name that goes on forever that wherever you look around this, there's this name.
That's fine.
And I said, how? Why did she do that? And she said, well, I want to make sure everybody knew exactly what I believed.
There's a church in Fort Worth. This is true.
This is where it is.
I know, but there's another one in Fort Worth that is the exact antithesis of that. It's called Joe Schumacher's. That's the name of the church.
That's a church.
Yeah, Joe Schumacher. It's just a, it's got, he's got the sign, you know, like a church sign and everything. My dad loved that place. He used to always drive by there. No. No, Dad, of course, probably thought it was at one time. He's always.
I just went.
Yeah.
Okay, back to Isaiah. You understand that this conspiracy towards, so that you won't step on somebody's idol. I mean, you understand how, what poor taste that is for you to step on somebody's idol?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's
huh?
A terrible poor taste.
Yeah. That's why you don't get invited to many parties.
Yeah.
Well, you guys like, get invited back.
Yeah, you're always last on the list, particularly around the holiday season. I kid when
it's not laughing matter.
Are you serious?
Don't do that in the morning.
Behold, all they that were incensed against him, against thee, shall be ashamed and confounded. They shall be as nothing, and they that strive with thee shall perish. Thou shalt seek them and shalt not find them, even them that contended with thee. They that war against thee shall be as nothing, and as a thing of naught.
Now, what they're talking, the contrast is between Jacob versus the alliance of idolatries, then the standing in it, fear not, for I'm with thee, be not dismayed. But I mean, because, man, I tell you what, when you start stand, when you stand, I mean, I'm not talking about being some great hero of the faith. I'm just talking about not buying into their, about the cause and effect system. I mean, it's tough.
That's the way that you feel during a hot seat, by the way.
What's that?
Those two verses. You know, ashamed, confounded, as nothing. You feel like you're going to perish. I mean, it's just...
It's the other guys that are going to perish, right?
Well, I know what I'm saying. At the
are
end,
you putting yourself in the other guy position?
Yeah, I know. That's the way I felt. It's like identifying with the other thing.
Okay.
For I, the Lord, thy God, will hold thy right hand, saying unto thee, fear not, I will help thee. Fear not, thou worm Jacob, and ye men of Israel, I will help thee, saith the Lord, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. Behold, I will make thee a new sharp threshing instrument having teeth. Thou shalt thresh the mountains and beat them small, and shalt make the hills as chaff. Thou shalt fan them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the whirlwind shall scatter them, and thou shalt rejoice in the Lord, and shalt glory in the Holy One of Israel. And the poor and needy seek water, and there is none, and their tongue faileth for thirst. I, the Lord, will hear them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them.
Okay. There, the word for worm in the Hebrew is a technical word. It means one of the four stages of the locust. Jacob is the worm from which Israel comes from.
He didn't save the good guy.
He didn't save Jacob. Jacob got dusted so that Israel could come forth.
Oh, okay.
All right. It's the worm butterfly. But God looks at the human race, and the human race to God is just a bunch of grasshoppers. And locust. I didn't mean grasshopper, I meant locust. This is one of the four stages of a locust.
That's what I thought. That's why I couldn't figure out why.
Well, a grasshopper.
Like if you were going to be a worm in the eyes of God, you'd have plenty of fear.
Well, no, because you know, you don't, if you know that, but you know that you have the faith as a grain of mustard seed. And it's not how small it is, you just know what it's going to be. The mustard seed is a mustard. It's going to become something. The mustard seed knows what it is. If you know who you are, then it doesn't matter what it looks like on the outside.
Be a worm and it's okay.
Well, it doesn't matter. I'm a worm. I'm perishing. I'm just falling apart. I don't care.
Yeah, because you're going to get more food.
You can learn a new word? What's the new word, Ricky?
Metamorphosis.
It's like
the word for transfiguration. It's whenever you read transfigure, you've been metamorphosed.
What did you study up on the stuff, Ricky?
That's what we're studying in the. Do you know that Rick is gracing us with his presence every morning?
Well, not this morning.
Why weren't you there this morning?
I'm staying in my room. I've been thrown out of my house. Now you want me to go to breakfast?
He's parody.
Well, of course.
But I gotta take Alan to work.
Oh, good excuse.
Bring
the homeless guy into it.
Yeah, what did your parents think about bringing a homeless guy to their house?
Oh, well, he's over there now.
He's having a ball. You're leaving.
Oh, my dad loves it.
Yeah, because drinking beer with his old man.
All the Bickersons want is an audience anyway.
Yeah, he's the perfect house.
Yeah, and they just all the time. The
Rick's got
part,
this homeless guy that we put in his house. And we kicked Rick out of his house so we could put the air conditioning guys in to build the air conditioner.
Right.
Now he took his homeless guy and him and went
to my parents' house.
To Sarah's parents'
house.
But
the funniest part is the homeless guy now has the biggest bedroom. Because we're all staying downstairs and he has this huge master bedroom upstairs.
He'd be driving the Jew car.
I'm serious.
This has got to be really weird.
He's got a master bedroom. He's got a master bedroom, his own television set,
so.
And his own bathroom.
I don't
he's literally the whole upstairs.
No, I'm sure he's like cloud nine. I don't think it's at all weird for him.
It's funny.
And I think probably David loves
it. But Alan is like, Alan's one of these guys that he doesn't.
He's a charming
home. He doesn't care about God stuff.
Oh, God, no. Alan didn't care at all. He didn't.
And he's just, he's got an excuse why he's homeless. He's got a plan. He's got 14 agendas.
He's not homeless.
Huh?
He's not homeless.
He just doesn't have a home.
Right. Don't label me.
Don't label me homeless.
I'm not homeless.
I'm not homeless. I just don't have any place to live. Right. I don't have a job. I don't have any money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he gets furious
his
if you ever call him homeless.
Pride is just crushed.
Yeah, if you ever
it's
call him
like
homeless,
pride
he'll power
it.
Between jobs.
He got furious because, you know, people just call me homeless so they can, you know, so they can get a badge and feel good about them.
Where'd you find it?
That's what I was
he found us.
Yeah, he found us. Because he's home.
But don't tell him that.
Yeah, here's this guy staying in my home, but he's not home. Where are you going to go?
And he's eating for nothing. But
plus, he's got your home.
That's what I mean. He's driving my car. He doesn't have any money. He's living in my house.
And he's eating our food.
Well, now my parents.
Hey, who's this? Drinking Dublin Dr. Pepper.
Okay, who read? Where'd you stop?
I stopped at 17. I got one or two more. I woke with rivers in high places and fountains in the midst of the valley.
Now, hear me. The high places, that's here in our heads. This is the mountains, the seven mountains in the book of Revelation, the place where you worship the false idolatry. Now, there is where the rivers of living water will come from.
I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry land springs of water. I will plant in the wilderness the cedars, the shittah tree, and the myrtle, and the oil tree. I will set in the desert.
Tree twat. Tea tree oil.
I knew you were going to say
that. I'll set in the desert the fir tree and the pine and the box tree together.
Go ahead and read that last verse. That's the end of it.
That they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of the Lord hath done this, and the Holy One of Israel hath created it.
Okay. This the reading here, remember, it's in conjunction with the starting to study Abraham. The first call of Abraham, not all these ridiculous promises to Abraham that have no, but the reading of the prophets is about this end thing, the end result. Now, you got to hear this. To God and to us, to Spirit, the beginning and the end are the same point. Like, no, eternity, we got to get it finally that eternity is where all the promises are. Everything exists in eternity. But eternity isn't someplace in the future, it's no time at all. So our role via the cross, via losing the right to ourselves, is to live in eternity. Now, I remember talking, you know, some of you know Jeff Sterling, and he's this incredibly obnoxious New Age guy that's richer than anybody in the universe. Huh?
I thought you were going to say richer than Croesus.
Yeah.
Didn't, so I had to fill it in.
What's his name? It's a dirty job.
His name is Jeff Sterling. Jeff.
More money than anybody ever needed.
But anyway, he made in one deal, he made $125 million. He's a broadcasting guy. He owned the stations, television stations across Canada that were on the U.S. border. So he bought the best of ABC, NBC, and CBS, program done on his stations in Canada, aired it in Detroit and all across the northern U.S., and just blew out every other television station, and then sold them for hundreds of millions of dollars. Anyway, he's a total and complete believer in the New Age movement, and he finally reached a point where we became we were good friends, but But he kept saying he worships this wheel of life. You know, the idea, because that's the whole part of Hindu philosophy and the part of the New Age genre is the wheel of the circle of life, the cycle of life. And I said, I don't care about improving the cycle. I just want to get off the wheel. Mm-hmm. And we get off that wheel, we leave time by entering eternity where all the promise is now. The test of it is this ridiculous world we live in. But to God, from God's standpoint, it's the poor and the needy that are the important ones. It's where he just said it. When the poor and needy seek water, and there is none after the natural, and their tongue faileth for thirst, I, the Lord, will hear, and I will not forsake. This mystery is always only for the poor and the needy. I don't feel like talking anymore. It's a miracle. Okay, take it, big guy. Take it, big guy.